Yeah, so this is just super casual. I just want to have like a conversation as opposed to being like an interview, because we're all very familiar with each other. So
Apex has been out for a while now, and I don't know how long y'all have been with Apex. Like, have you been with it since the start?
Eric and I joined a year of it before me.
I think I started working on Apex around like season 3-4 or something, but when we ended up releasing content in 7 and 8 was the first time we started releasing content. But we were part of like playtesting and just like providing feedback to the team in LA, because we're both in Vancouver. We kind of, we were a part of the kind of original crew that started up Respawn Vancouver.
I joined in season, I grabbed for season 7, Horizon Olympus season. But before that, I guess prior to that, I was just playing a lot. Probably had like 3,000 to 4,000 hours before joining. So I was just able to provide kind of that seasoned player perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we took the play test and it was with all journalists, and you brought out your personalized scuff controller, and I was like, you don't need to do all that right now.
Yeah, I got the little Battle Beaver controller. Yeah.
That's a lot of time that you spent in this game. What has been the hardest update that you've had to like push for? Something that you've gotten a lot of pushback on from higher up?
I would say maybe actually the legend upgrade system. Maybe one, season 20. Because that was a funny update. You know, it's very wide ranging. It really transformed, I think, how the flow of the game worked. We not only changed legends and how they with upgrades, but also how evil armor works. No longer lootable. Adding, you know, Evo stations throughout the map you can get Evo from. Like, very transformative, but it can also look like, well, it's not a legend, so why are you guys doing that? So I think that's been a journey that we've been going on of like, how can we make really impactful changes that touch large parts of the game that don't look like the typical update we usually do? And I think that was a huge success. Season 20 legend upgrade system and Evo armor change, fans loved it. We got a lot of feedback saying it made the game feel fresh again in a way that previous updates sometimes didn't. That was very validating, getting the community feedback and how positive that was. And it showed us that we could be a bit more experimental with our releases and change how we approach our seasons.
Yeah, even I mean more recently, like this sort of support push was pretty contentious, and largely because we touched something that we had previously kind of taken away with, in terms of healing cadence and the sort of sanctity of damage trading and healing and windows of opportunity to sort of capitalize on things. And so a bit of a gamble to shake that up and say, well, now you can, you know, use all small meds in half the time and they heal double once. Like, what does that mean? What are the cascading effects of that? And I think, you know, still evaluating that. I've had pro players, casual players, you know, come to me with on both sides saying, I actually love the support work. I feel empowered to support my teammates more. I could give them batteries. I can do, and then other players that are, you know, more frustrated that they have to adjust what they've done for years around combat, readability, and healing timing. So more to be determined there. But I think just like what Josh was saying, when we do dive in a bit more into taking these bigger changes, we do learn a lot pretty quickly, and it helps us kind of hone our craft.
You guys look a lot at numbers to determine some changes. But I feel like there is sort of a disconnect between the data that you see between like, versus the people who actually play the game and how they might react to things, right? So one of the things would be the battle pass change. How does that get factored into like future decisions? Because obviously you can look at numbers, but the reaction should be completely different.
Yeah, I mean, we can speak more on we don't have control of the MTX stuff, the economics of it, or more on the design side, but there's always that counterplay or interplay between player feedback and numbers, and we try to take both into account. So we have teams of people on the game that look at qualitative data, which is player sentiment, but also survey data. We do lab studies sometimes, pull players in and just have them play the game and ask them questions. Then we also have the analytics side, which is more numbers based, and that's pick rates and counter win rates, things like that. So We try to take both perspectives into, because exactly, something might look a certain way, but yeah, how are people feeling about it is a big part of that. And that's not only when we look at something pre, like after it's gone out, but even before it goes out, we try to sometimes anticipate, hey, what are the spicy changes? What are we going to hear about the most? And what are levers that, to make adjustments? You know, we're getting tighter and tighter in our iteration loop there of making changes faster and faster post-launch if the feedback is overwhelming.
Yeah, I think a good example of that somewhat recently is like we had a big 30-30 meta, and you know, the data did not suggest that there was anything wrong with the 30-30. In fact, it was like, it's doing okay, like a little better than normal, but the data was just like, nothing to worry about here. But the stories were like, the 30-30's everywhere, just three 30-30's barreling down on me every time I pop my head out. And that was like, okay, we need to respect that. We need to respect that the air around the 30-30 is maybe not as positive as maybe the data suggests. But there's a moment when we're just like, okay, well, let's make some changes to the 30-30. Data didn't really change a whole lot, but the stories became a lot more positive now that it was like kind of reined in.
That has to be really hard to take into factor, right? Because like you look at something and you're just like, oh, that's giving me immediate feedback. But then you have to wait for all the reactions to come in. I do not envy y'all in your position sometimes. So can you take me through like the process of, you know, pushing for an update, right? Like with the, you were talking about the leveling system. Like how long did that take for you to actually get approval for that?
Well, I can tell you, I mean, it spent probably a year in iteration.
Yeah.
You're closer to it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good testament to the sort of collaboration across disciplines within the design team, because, you know, we had this initiative on Legends to add more depth to an avenues for player expression across the cast of Legends. But as a standalone thing, there just wasn't quite enough oomph there. Like, they just weren't impactful enough. And so, you know, we thought, and then, you know, in the meantime, we were also thinking about the mid-game lull and thinking about objectives and things the players could be doing to fill that time. And so that's where we kind of had this merging between, you know, map design and the Evo system and weapons and loot with the armor update and Legends to kind of all come together as an amalgamation that added depth, promoted movement around the map, created more interactions around map toys and whatnot, and so that was a nice validating thing and helped guide us into the future, I guess, in terms of what we can learn from.
But it took a lot. It went through a lot of iterations.
Yeah.
Like so, I remember. I mean, we do a lot. We have a very big culture of open feedback internally in Respawn, and I mean, I remember the emails trickling in during playtest. What are you doing? You're ruining the game.
There's a lot of that,
which is completely fair. That's the kind of reaction we're looking for.
Right? Passion. It comes from a place of passion.
Comes from a place of deep. Yeah, exactly. People care about the game,
yeah.
And they have a lot of stake in it. And I want to hear that 6 months before we release. Now it's 6 months after we release, right? Or 6 days after release. So I mean, that bounced back and forth. We went in a bunch of different directions, but that feedback helped us settle on the eventual version we shipped, which I think is the strongest version. And you know, the same people after it launched, you know what, guys, actually, you're right. I'm really happy about how it turned out. And it's like, awesome, you know, love to see people, you know, come go through the whole cycle of it and eventually come around to going, oh, okay, I think you guys landed in a good place. And so yeah, that was really great.
Yeah, I remember that one was because it was such a big effort across the teams. There was, for a long time, it was just Legend perks and stuff. Yeah. And it just felt like something was missing. And I remember working with the Legends lead, and I had problems on the armor side. I had problems with like getting, people were getting like, you know, end game armor right off the rip. And it was just like the disparity of an encounter with somebody's on white and somebody's on purple. It's too much. And so it's like, how do we solve that problem? Oh, you guys are doing something over here. We're just talking about like kind of the story of a match, the progression of your power journey in the middle of a match. And it's like, well, what if we like fuse this all together and get the armor problem, like solve the armor problems with this new leveling system they had. And then when we put that in, it was just like, oh, it's like, it was magic. Everything started coming together. And then we started working a lot closer together. And that time is a really good time for the team. I think the team itself matured, and this is a feature that sort of helped us figure out even more how we can work together and make cohesive changes that, like you said, touch all parts of the game and the player's motivation across it.
Yeah. Okay. So you talked about, yeah, obviously that feedback from all sorts of players and also internally. But how hard is it to balance this whole game to support casual players who, you know, maybe they play like an hour a day and they have no idea, you know, they play like Call of Duty, right? Like it's, they get in and then they get out. They don't really pay attention to movement or anything. They just think it's a fun game to play. Versus the people who are really high levels who demand a lot more intricate mechanics to be implemented in the game. How do you find that middle ground?
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, it's a catch-22. You can't win as a denoter because the pro team will say, oh, then they go catering to casuals again. Casuals, oh, there they go catering to the pro team. And the reality is that, yeah, we I don't think we do that.
No.
I think we, you know, we're all formed by our own play experience, our own play tests, but we have, you know, massive amounts of data to inform decisions. I don't think there's any like clean answer I can give to like, this is the philosophy, but I think we do like recognize that, you know, some characters might not ever see the light of day in the competitive meta, you know, and some might just be destined for a life in pubs, and they're just more of a fun, accessible legend in that way. And we don't have to try to fit a square peg into a round hole all the time. I think when I think about balancing, I just think about leading into the identities of weapons or legends, or, you know, if something is OP, it maybe it's okay that it's OP in this one vector. Maybe we just have to think about pulling it down in ways that aren't as intrinsic to its identity. But in terms of casual and pro, yeah, I don't know, there's not really a...
I think, like, anytime I'm making a final call on a balancing decision, I always ask two questions, easy questions. Is how are the highly engaged players going to receive this, and how are the low engagement players going to receive this? And the goal is to try to not outrage one of them and mitigate if it feels like, oh, they're going to hate this. Well, that's probably a orange flag. We should probably keep iterating here until we get to a point where at least there's no outrage in this decision making. So just ask a lot of questions. And we ask it to ourselves. We ask it to random people on the team who we know are high or low engagement players. And then we ask our data and our research team, like, we just ask a ton of questions. And it could be as trivial as, like, are they going to get mad that we put this attachment on this weapon, right? Probably not going to outrage too many people, up to things like, are we going to remove lootable armor, right? And it's like, okay, that's maybe going to hurt people, so how are we going to mitigate? How are we going to make sure that these people that might have been outraged have these, you know, ways to engage with it, which seems fair or seems good or palatable for, you know, their play styles? So, yeah, ask a lot of questions, but specifically asking, like, what are the pros going to say? What are the counters going to say? What are the high engage? What are the low engage going to say? And just lots of questions and theorizing what we think the answers are going to be. And we are human. Sometimes we whiff, we get it wrong, and then that's when we ask again after it's in the live game, hot fix or make adjustments or just have a plan on, you know, how's it going to adjust over time.
Yeah, and actually, I was an example along these lines of Octane. The recent conversation on Octane, because, you know, we look at Pickards and Mez and think about, hey, has something been the same for too long? In that case, maybe we should look at changing it up. And Octane had been very popular for a long time. You know, fan favorite, obviously. There you go. Okay. Well, then you'll be shocked. And I'm going to be worried to learn. We were like, has he been up there too long? Is there something going on here? And so we talked about it for a while. And then we ended up going, you know what? Let's just leave Octane where Octane is. Because, yes, Octane has been popular for a long time. But maybe that's a comfortable place for Octane to be. Because think about the kind of player that plays that character and the kind of context that characters exist in. And it's like kind of solo pubs. I just want to jump in. I just want to hit my speed boosters and run around and have fun. It's not breaking the LGS scene. I don't think we've ever seen it. Octane in the LGS. It's not like warp. But like, it's not warping the competitive environment. There's people having fun over here. Why? Not for Candy, on the other hand, for no reason. It's not bothering anyone. Let's leave it. Let's let it alone. So there's things like that where, like, data alone might guide us to make a decision to change the balance of that legend. But when you think about the experience of it, it's like, it's fine where it is, actually. Let's just leave it alone. So that's the kind of considerations we have.
how frustrating is it to see something that you clearly work together so hard with your team on to make it feel as balanced as possible? In your head, it makes sense, right? And then when it comes out, players don't understand the reasoning behind it. Is there a way that that could be better communicated, do you think?
I think that's on us to communicate. I wouldn't blame players for not reading our minds. So I think along with our design philosophy, there's also an evolution in our communication style. In our patch notes, we recently started doing like sort of in italics, like dev thoughts, like in where it's like, here's the raw numbers, and then here's just a paragraph of us explaining why we're doing this and what our thought process is. So agree or disagree, you at least know what our intent is.
Yeah.
And then that opens up a conversation rather than people just, understandably, seeing something out of context and imagining what our intent is. And then it's a straw man conversation. Whereas what we want to do is start a conversation based on a common understanding of like, this is how you see the world, this is how we see the world. All right, now let's begin to discuss.
Coming from a player perspective then to the dev perspective of seeing the behind the scenes of the process. In reality, we are a big team of coworkers working on a project. And even within that team, there will be disagreements or differences in philosophy around certain things. And I have personally, not been thrilled with some of the things we have done. But it's like, we're a live game. I have a lot of faith in the team. I know that we will learn from it either way. I will learn from it. There's a lot of times I have fears don't become fully realized, or I was worried when I didn't have to be. And I'll learn, we make adjustments, we pivot, but it does take solace in the fact that, like, how are we supposed to get any better at our craft if we're not willing to take some risks and fail and learn from that and iterate on that? But like any big project with any team, there's going to be disagreement. We don't all move forward and walking down like everything is going to be perfect. Like, we have heated discussions a lot of the time, and then that's
John challenges me all the time. Like, yeah. All the time, we're sitting in meetings and all the time, like, what if we do this? John's like, why did you do that? It's like, but that's so healthy. We need that. Like, I need people to challenge me, and I challenge John. Like, he challenges both of us. But that's his job.
No, he's the only one.
But it's you're right. Like, it's a healthy environment when you feel safe enough to say, but why? Like, should we even do that? Is that healthy for the game? Or rather, this is something that we talk about a lot. It's like, if I can't convince John that it's a good idea, how am I going to convince the millions of people to play it? And I think we talk about that a lot. It's like, the first thing that we need to do is get people on board within the development team. And if we can't do that, then boy, we got our work cut out for us. So, it's a fun process, and it's a very, very collaborative process.
Yeah, I guess to like title again, I think it's a great point. Like, it's those conversation and challenges and debates we have internally that sharpens that intent. So because you go, yeah, why are we doing this? I better have a good explanation for this. And then by the time you whittle down the list of ideas to the list of changes that we're making, only the best ones are surviving, we feel. And those ones that have survived that sniff test of like, yeah, we've got a good reason to do it. We feel it's balanced, we feel it's healthy. So there's often a really good reason if it survived that whole process. But I do agree with you, we don't always do a great job of communicating that reason. And that's something we're trying to improve for sure.
Yeah, this has been very enlightening, because it's nice to hear there's pushback from other people.
Right.
Which is fun, because it's like, yeah, of course, not everyone's going to have the best idea, or it's not going to be the right idea. What is one idea that individually you've had that you thought was a great idea, but actually turned out to be not a great thing that you should implement?
I was prototyping a Pathfinder passive that I called, it was the friendship meter. And Pathfinder would go around doing things to build friendship with his teammates. So anytime you would revive, similar like kind of Evo actions, if you got an assist or you build up your friendship meter, and then you would go high five your teammate and get another grapple charge or get a piece of loot or something.
Battery popped out.
Yeah. And refined it. And I really liked fantasy, and maybe there's a version of friendship, that works somewhere.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it was like just a mess trying to like coordinate with your teammate. It would just be chasing down your teammate. And you're like, I'm trying to high five you. I'm trying to like cash in my friendship with you. Where are you going? And just with the pace of play, it was just like messy and trying to do a lot of things at once. So I learned a lot from that process. But yeah,
I remember that. Yeah.
We're not too precious. Like, we tried out so much stuff
that
doesn't ever see the light of day.
And the worst is the things like that where you're like, this is cool. There's something cool. There's something here.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there's something here, but it's not enough.
We can't, yeah, there's no clear path from like here to like the version that we feel is like fluid and balanced. And,
yeah.
Yeah, the thing we try it is like, we're just thinking about the
ring grenade.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a bunch of these things here, but like,
I still do that, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I don't know if you remember the Maggie, Bad Maggie LTM where you had those ring flares. It's like basically, yes, like, what if you had a grenade that just like let you do that? That's one of those things that this, the fantasy, they're so cool. It fits with the games. But like we haven't figured out the way that it doesn't just feel so frustrating to play against. But yeah, there's stuff like that. Yeah, we're always trying things like that, that have a strong fantasy, seem really cool. And then, yeah, just trying to figure out the ones that work.
Yeah, we made a cryo grenade, and it's like, it's the natural evolution of grenades. We've got fire grenades, red grenades, arc stars, let's do a freezing grenade. And it was really trolly. Well, we had a lot of different versions of it, but one of them, it put like ice down on the floor and it carried your momentum. So you're like, you're slipping and you're slipping and it slides you across and you try to slide people off the map, or it would freeze loop ins and you couldn't open a loop in without meleeing it multiple times. And it's just like, okay, it's kind of funny, but like, why? Again, why is this here? What is it doing? And it's like, you know, and then, in the process of doing that, it refines, well, what should a grenade even be? Right? Like, okay, well, let's try all these cool utility type grenades. And it's like, yeah, but when I hit grenade button and throw, I needed to do damage. I needed, like, I have an expectation of what a grenade does. And it's like, so in the process of trying out what we think is just a cool new idea, it's like, okay, well, that was crap. But what it did is it honed in what a grenade means in Apex and sort of like reinforced the rules around some of the things and that are sacred to the game. So that's why we try so much. That's why it's like, normally, no isn't an early answer. It is prove it to me. It is, let's try it, right? And then it can be no very, very quickly after that. It could be no right after the first playtest, which again happens all the time. But the proof is in the pudding, right? Nine times out of 10, it's like, well, build it, and then we'll have a conversation around it. And I think that's one of the great things about working at Respawn is, you know, the freedom that kind of Josh affords the whole game design team is like, you can do anything as long as we can prove it out, right? And then we get to the nitty-gritty of what do we have to cut? What's going to actually make it into the season? What is healthy for the game? But
it's struggling. Yeah. You talk about going through different things, different ideas, and solidifying what something is. And movement in Apex has always been great, but tap striking has always been such a hot topic. And I think it's so hard to find a middle ground for that, right? Because casual players are definitely not able to do that, especially for people who log on to Xbox and, you know, they're like, how do you do that? That's not real. How has that topic been managed and like talked about internally? Because I can't imagine figuring out a place to start.
It's been a huge topic for a long time and continues to be. I mean, part of the secret sauce of Apex is movement and something we've been better about lately and will continue to improve on is just reaching out to community members that and specialize in movement or that really incorporate it into their play to help us test improvements. You know, I learned a lot over the last just couple of years about movement and what it means in different sort of skill bands, because yeah, there's a lot of people that don't even know what tap strafing means. And then there's people that, you know, tap strafing just the tip of the iceberg, or what is that? What do you actually define that as? And I think it's interesting because I think it's sort of like it counters itself in its own way at different skill bands. Depending on who you talk to, you may have a different philosophy about it. But I guess the biggest thing is that we need to continue to lean on the community for this. Because the most recent change, which was a targeted attempt at help fixing degenerate sort of automated like comp like chaining of flourishing. Something that, you know, we've done similarly where we prevented config chaining a year ago or so. So it was mostly just targeted at degenerate play patterns, but it obviously had these fall effects that we weren't diligent enough at trying to catch. So that's why we're just prioritizing getting the community involved early for some of those more sensitive topics.
Yeah, I think it's tough because, I mean, obviously you weren't on the team for Titanfall, but Titanfall kind of had the same issue where it just kind of ended up leaning way too heavily to the elite players, and it kind of bullied off a lot of the casual players. And I do know that, like, if you look on Steam, of course, the Steam charts are going down with player numbers in Apex. Do you think it's because casual players are feeling more frustrated in pubs, feeling like they are, every time they go in, they're placed against people who are way better than them?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speculate on that kind of stuff. We just focus on the design of the game. But definitely I think at its heart, Apex, we want to be the best competitive shooter out there. I think there's a strong market of those. You look at Valorant, Siege, you know, there's huge communities around those games, and I think a competitive-minded player. But I do think, as well, we could do a better job of getting those players into the experience. I think something that we struggle with often is, how do you learn this game if you haven't already been playing it for 4 years, you know? That isn't to say that... So yeah, I think there's improvements we can make, I think, over the course of the next year or so and into the future of... not just onboarding, obviously tutorials and things, but also thinking about the formula of the Battle Royale itself and how does a player start playing in 2025 and what's that journey like to get to the place where they're playing the game competently. So that's the kind of stuff we talk about the design side all the time. Is there things we can streamline and simplify? Is there systems we can add to make the game easier to learn? Never wanting to really remove the heart of what makes it tick and what makes it so appealing. So that's something very precious at the heart of that.
I think it's so interesting too, because Valorant is very competitive. I mean, it kind of just throws you in there. The tutorial is not a tutorial at all. So, I mean, and you say you don't want to speculate, but I mean, we're all gamers. So why do you think it is that the Apex community specifically is like, oh, this is so bad for casual players, when Valorant, even as a casual player, like it takes you like a year to even get good at the game to get one kill, at least in my experience. So it's like, why do you think there's this disparity between the two games with the community?
Yeah, I mean, we look at Valorant and it's staying the shoulders of CSGO and CS. And this is not at all meant to be like, no. I'm trying to stir drama with the Riot. I'll get a lightning bolt hit me. But like, I just look at that style of game. I played Counter-Strike when I was a kid. I mean, and that's the age of myself. I had a teacher in university making Counter-Strike maps when I was a moth. Like, so you're looking at just such a focused experience. It's been, all the edges have been shaved off. And I think Valorant's done an incredible job of what they added to that, but there's like a known world in a way that they're building from. And I think Apex, what's interesting about it is, it's really the Wild West. I mean, it's a competitive game, it's a battle royale. A battle royale as a genre is quite new still. Compared to some other competitive shooters, action shooters. So I can see the thing of like, how does somebody get into this? There's so much to learn and know, and the community has gotten so good at mastering it, that how do we now organically take someone along for that ride? So that's the question we're asking ourselves for 5 years in. I think day zero, we were all figuring it out together. This is the thing we say in terms of the design team. It's like, yeah, it's okay at day zero. They had good players, you had bad players, but we're all figuring it out. It's been kind of figured out now. And so now how do we take new players along for that ride? That's really the question we're trying to figure out.
I think with Apex in particular, that has been tricky is that the Battle Royale format, you have the highest highs when you can navigate a crazy endgame amongst 20 squads, be the last one standing. Like, that rush is big. It also means you only win one in 20 matches in theory, right? And so those moments of peak success are just rarer than you'd find in other games. So it can feel punishing if you are like a more novice player trying to introduce yourself into the BR genre, especially when you're just a sweaty reputation that Apex does. So I think that's been a challenge. This sort of changes around respawning and support stuff has been kind of a first step of like lowering the stakes a bit and allowing you to just get more reps within one match before you have to re-queue. Like that was a big goal of the respawn changes and the support changes. So something to keep exploring and thinking about with Ray.